And welcome back to the Princeton Tiger Performance Podcast. I am Jason Colucci, Director of Performance at Princeton. I'm again joined by Dr. Mike Gross. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. Excited for our special guest today.
We do have a special guest. Dr. Julia Motto joins us. Julie, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Another extremely important member of our team that's been working with our student athletes here at Princeton over the last few years and has done remarkable work. And we're excited to have her on the podcast. Mike, you want to take us down the headlines?
Yeah, so our headlines for today. So first, we're going to talk about stress and the student athletes and ways athletes might be able to manage the stressors that they face. Next, we're going to talk about athlete retirement. We figured that would be pretty timely given that a lot of seniors are graduating around this time of year. And then we're going to move into our tips of the week. I do have an additional stressor of the Knicks being in the draft lottery this evening. So Dr. Julie, if you want to walk me through that at some point during the podcast, we might have to take a look.
I tell you what, that's a big one for the Zion sweepstakes. Yeah. You could be absolutely changing the organization. But I think most Knicks fans expect it to go the way it shouldn't go. It's kind of a doomsday feeling going around in that fan base. So
yeah, I'm treating stress just like you shouldn't treat stress. I'm catastrophizing the situation, assuming the worst.
Of course.
Mike, is it 14% chance they have?
14% chance.
Do you like those odds?
I mean, it's better than the other odds. You got the Cavs, and who else has a 14% chance?
I thought it was just the two.
No, I think there's one more. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. But so let's jump into our topic of stress. So I want to ask you guys a question that would lead us into this a little bit. There was a study that came out, and in that study they asked participants, did you experience a great deal of stress yesterday? And this was participants in the United States. What percentage do you think said they did experience a great deal of stress yesterday?
You want to take the first crack at it? Doctor?
You're probably going to go. Go ahead.
Gosh. I think 75%.
See, I would have went in that range as well.
So I'm going to go with 90.
It was 43%.
Wow.
Yeah. So lower than we might think, okay. Right? Lower than we might think. And the question I want to throw out to you guys just to get this topic started is, if we ask that to our Princeton student athletes, what do you think that number would be? And if it is higher than that 43% or lower, why?
Well, not necessarily a fair question for me because we do document this in readiness questionnaires.
got the data.
I can get into the data there a little bit. You know, but what I can say is, as we do document it in a self-reported questionnaire, that there are certainly ebbs and flows throughout the course of the year, depending on what's going on from an academic or even an athletic perspective. But they seem to be, I think, a pretty even keel. And I think really what that means is that the understanding of stress and exactly how much stress is the norm for a certain individual. And Princeton certainly adds a fair amount of stress to your life as you're an academic institution, an Ivy League institution, and trying to compete in Division I athletics. So I think the norm for their stress is a little bit different than the norm might be for, you know, yourself or myself or Julie. So we do have data. We do quantify that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Mike, you and I get a select sample size of athletes that we interact with, and many of them self-selecting because they're overwhelmed with stress. So I would say that it's higher than that 43% in this population. Some are more skilled at managing it than others. But I did have one, to put a finer point on it, one athlete say to me last year that she didn't think she's ever taken a stress-free breath at Princeton. And that hit me right between the eyes. I was like, wow. You know, kind of get that pit in your stomach feeling like, boy, this kid is just wound up tight and, you know, really needing to figure out how to relieve that.
Yeah. So in doing work with her, is there anything that stands out that you were able to do?
Well, this is a really high-level kid in terms of her athleticism and, you know, so she was very diligent and conscientious and always wanting to be the best. And so, that you know, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. And that really drove her to be one of the best in the country at what she did. But getting her to understand and appreciate that you don't have to be driven that way in everything, every single thing that you do all the time and constantly comparing yourself to others. And so I think it was just trying to get a little deeper with her about her value outside of sport. And just kind of helping her understand and appreciate, like, okay, you know, even if I'm not the greatest at everything all the time, I still have value and I don't have to constantly be on that quest. Even though that is what made her great at her sport, I think it made her suffer in some other areas. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing that we see all the time, that that type of passion and being driven by the stress to succeed makes you successful, and that on the other side of it can lead to a lot of anxiety. It can lead to a lot of perfectionism. It can lead to a lot of frustration that is becomes often that we have to work with in clinical sessions to be able to work through that. When we're talking about stress, it's not only the stressors that occur to us, but how we perceive those stressors, right? So how would you define stress? Do you have like a definition that you use to define stress?
It's interesting, as it relates to performance, I always equate stress with arousal in some ways, you know? So it's like something that is an impetus to get you from a static state where you're not doing anything to kind of moving into doing something. And so I think, you know, maybe that's because, Mike, you and I are trying to teach kids to learn how to make friends with stress and to acknowledge that stress can be a good thing. But yeah, I think it is a force that kind of, you know, drives your body to do certain things physiologically, and then drives you mentally to even be more focused and to kind of concentrate on something a little bit more.
Yeah, and to kind of couple that, I mean, from a performance perspective, you know, we use stress as a tool. Right? Stress is a way for us to develop an athlete and to develop their skills. Very simply put, mechanically, stress is the force applied to an object, right? And we can monitor physiological stress in many ways, right? We could look at internal loading by looking at heart rate response to exercise or any type of activity. We could look at external loading by looking at GPS data. And as a performance coach, we use that stress and we manage that stress to help develop the athlete. So we're not in any way in our world trying to create a stress-free environment. Instead, we're trying to use that stress, Julie, as you said, kind of it becomes your friend, as really as a tool to get better as an athlete and to continue to grow and to continue to move on.
Yeah, there was a study that came out, I believe, in 2013, and one of the findings of the study is that people who experience or endorse experiencing greater levels of stress actually also endorse greater levels of meaning in their life. So there's that correlation there before that a meaningful life can be a stressful life.
Yeah, I've seen that, Megan, is, you know, that a moderate amount of stress is actually good for you. We don't want to have no stress, but then again, kind of that bell-shaped curve, you don't want to be so far on the other end of stress, kind of like this young woman that I was talking about, that you can't experience joy in your life and you're constantly wound up and you can't relax. But I think we're on the same page here. Stress is not necessarily the enemy.
No, and again, the perception of it is really what matters. There was that old scale that was out. I'm not sure, Dr. Julie, you remember the name of it. It was like Holmes and Rain.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you remember this? And this scale lists out, I would say, maybe 100 things, 100 to 200 things that can happen to somebody over the course of a year that are stressful. So the death of a family member, divorce, moving, losing a job, all things like that. And you go through the list and you rate if that's happened to you. And if you have a certain number above, like, let's say, we'll call it 150, that would mean like you're at risk for health issues due to stress. So that was kind of the old way of looking at things. And now that's not so true. It's like you could have all these stressors, but really how you relate to them is what matters. That's far more important than the actual experience of the stressors themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. And I think, you know, as we talk about athletes in general at Princeton or on the professional levels, you know, many times when we see athletes fall from grace or struggle, it's because they've had those stressors, but maybe not the skills to manage them, and they've become overwhelmed. And I think a little bit we in our society set our athletes up for that, because we always talk about being tough, suck it up, don't whine, don't complain, you know, and then we have a group of individuals who are internalizing all this stuff and they don't talk about it, they don't process it, they don't work through it, and they hit that boiling point. And you've seen, you know, famous athletes come out and talk about this, whether it's Michael Phelps, you know, talking about after the Olympics being so depressed that he was suicidal and coping by using drugs, or we talk about, you know, Kevin Love, who was so depressed and anxious that he was having panic attacks on the court before he actually sought help. And so, you know, I think that it's really important that we're having the conversation about when stress becomes too much and that it's okay to seek help. But I think the better conversation for us to have is about how you can be more proactive instead of reactive in terms of managing stress.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. And again, from a performance perspective, right, when you when you're trying to develop yourself, you go to a professional. You go to a strength conditioning coach, a specialist that's going to help you develop your physical skills. You don't try to manage those stressors on your own. You seek out the help of a registered dietitian because you know that how you fuel will help you recover from the stresses of exercise and prepare for the stresses of exercise. You know, and it's really at that point now where we've got to kind of change the dynamic and really get our athletes to understand that you go to a professional such as yourselves to help manage the mental and psychological stress and from a performance perspective as much as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about things like a simple thing like developing a mindfulness meditation routine, and often we're working with athletes to do that and others in times when they're really highly stressed, that they feel very overwhelmed. And I think, Jason, what you're suggesting is a really good idea, is that we're more preventative and getting on top of it and having these things integrated into the programs rather than looking at it reactively.
And these athletes at Princeton are so sharp, and I think that's why we're seeing so many athletes come and understand the value of being proactive and actually developing a skill set to manage stress, because they're in these high-pressure situations. And just even just daily wellness. I know, Jason, you and I have talked about, like, what is mental wellness and how does that differ from just the sports psychology stuff and everything else? And so, you know, and Dr. Mike and I doing work on helping athletes develop techniques to proactively take care of their mental wellness. And you've got, you know, Asia Durr coming out on the national stage. Now, she's from Louisville, a women's basketball player, now with the New York Liberty, talking about how every week she goes to counseling and she meditates every day. And so, you know, athletes now on the national stage are it's not just the stories of how I was so overwhelmed and fell apart. It's, this is what I do because I really want to succeed, and these are the ways in which I know I need to grow and develop.
Yeah, I mean, which is so important for athletes to know that there are tools and strategies out there that could be beneficial for you if you're dealing with stress. I really do think, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, that a lot of what we're looking at with stress is we have this event that happens to us. I'm bringing this up because I feel like I've been talking about it all week with the people, the athletes that I'm working with, that we have this event that happens to us that is stressful. So finals week, not being one of the top athletes on the team, not performing well at an event. So we have this stress, and what we do is layer a story on top of that stress, an interpretation of it. So finals are coming up, I'm not going to be able to pass my classes. If I don't pass my classes, like, I'm going to get kicked out of Princeton, and maybe I don't belong here to begin with. Your mind starts to generate this rather catastrophic and judgmental and hurtful story. And then it becomes far less about the actual initial stress that you experience and far more about the story you layer on top of it. And to me, that's suffering. You know, you start to suffer when you do that. And that's the cause of a lot of problems, rather than embracing the beginnings, the primary stressor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's actually makes a ton of sense, Mike, because there's always, you know, we talk with our athletes too, and Jason, I know you can appreciate this, at being a former high-level athlete. You know, you're in
I don't know about it.
I was going to say.
Well, Penn State football, guys. Penn State football.
I was a former athlete.
I did say former, didn't I?
Yeah, you said high-level.
We'll check his stats after the podcast.
Former. See where it falls. You still look like you could do it, Jason.
I'd like to think so, but yeah. My body feels otherwise.
You're not the man you used to be.
No.
But you know, we've all dealt with these stressful situations and these events that are outside of your control. You know, finals. Now we've got some Princeton teams now and playoffs and, you know, NCAA tournaments and things like that. And so, Mike, it's such a great point where there's these activating events that might be inherently stressful, but your interpretation of them is far more important in terms of how it plays out. And so I think that's a great point, and one that we really want to help our athletes understand, that they have more control over the situation than they think, not the activating event, but their response.
Exactly. And that's the point of this TED Talks that you and I were speaking about before the podcast by Kelly McGonigal, that when people take on the mindset of stress is bad and it's going to hinder my health, it actually does. And when people take on the mindset of stress is beneficial and I'm going to be, it's positive, they are able to avoid a lot of the health consequences that typically would be associated with health, with stress. So,
yeah. All right, well, that's great stuff. Why don't we, let's move on to athletic retirement, and very timely, of course, at this juncture, and this, you know, we're in the month of May, and the college seasons are wrapping up. So whether you're a senior now that was a fall sport athlete, a winter sport athlete, or a spring sport athlete, those NCAA championship seasons are underway, and it's, you know, it's inevitable that for some of us, you know, that our athletic career is going to come to an end. And, you know, some will be fortunate to go on and continue to compete, but this can be a challenging time for sure. And sometimes it could be a little bit more rejoiceful. And some athletes also may not have, it may not be their decision as to whether it's their time for them to retire or not. And that can be challenging. I was certainly in that situation. It was kind of an abrupt end to my career when it happened. And I had a difficult time dealing with that. That wasn't easy. Didn't have people like you back then, you know, to talk to. And I don't know that you guys would have helped. You
know? I was going to say, we could try and do it now.
No. We already talked about that. No free sessions. I think I'm over it. I still dream about it every now and then, but I think I'm over it. As you go into the next phase of your life, is there any suggestions for those student athletes?
Well, my hope for them is that they've already done some of the work to lay the foundation for the next journey, you know, the next step, the next steps in their journey, because, you know, there is this phenomenon, I'm sure you're aware of it, Mike, and it sounds like you lived it, Jason, but the athlete in transition phenomenon is a thing, and it's a thing that, you know, has been talked about in the context of Olympic athletes in part because that's been their life, so much invested in their identity, but even here at the collegiate level, you know, Jason, to your point, we all retire from sport. I mean, nobody's going to play forever. So there's a time in which you have to have that transition into doing something else. And so my hope for a lot of the athletes here at Princeton is that they already have that next exciting step in place. And I think the transition's much easier when you have something you're excited to transition into, something that you're passionate about or really interested in. And I think the athletes that I've seen that have struggled the most with the transition, the future is a little bit unknown, and they don't really know exactly what the next thing is. And or their identity is so tied to sport that they haven't cultivated a lot of other interest. And so that transition becomes more challenging.
Yeah, I mean, to echo those sentiments, I feel exactly the same way. To the latter point, if we look at athletic identity, which is how strongly and exclusively an athlete identifies with the athletic role, and that means that a lot of their self-worth and self-esteem is tied into how they're doing performance-wise. Those folks may struggle a little bit more with the transition out of sport historically, and it is important then to make sure that they are exploring other avenues, other possible opportunities in life, and not getting caught up in ruminating and dwelling on the past too much. You know, there are other options out there, and there's hope for those paths. And I think the other point that you made is also true in terms of the ability to think about other opportunities and understanding that the passion that you showed for sport, it can be easily translated into any other aspect of life. And I think that's one of the wonderful things. That student athletes bring is like they've learned so many life lessons and they've shown so much commitment, so much passion, such great work ethic that, hey, when you find the next thing that you're passionate about, like you just got to throw all that into there, like you develop these characteristics. So it's just about finding that next thing that's meaningful for you.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, athletes here at Princeton are typically well situated in terms of, you know, obviously they're at the number one university in the country, and in order to get here, you're already a pretty well-rounded individual. And so, you know, having that next thing and helping athletes understand, like, the same energy and enthusiasm you brought to sport is going to likely make you successful at the next level. And all the lessons you learned in sport and kind of thinking about sport as growing in your appreciation for that opportunity and how it developed you as a person. But what would you guys advise for an athlete who, you know, because I've had this happen here and also at other places, who might reach out and say, I just miss competing. I miss the sport so much, and like, I feel like I'm like depressed about it. I mean, have you guys run into that or experienced that? And, you know, what might you help that athlete with to get through that?
Yeah, well, I certainly went through that. You know, again, my retirement coming not when I planned for it to come, so that was a little bit of a challenge. And I think that you know, Julie, as and Mike, as you were talking about, you're preparing yourself constantly for the next step anyway, you know, one way or another, whether you really know it or not. And fortunately, I had a really strong support group, and I think that you naturally have that strong support group in your team and in your teammates. And I had people that I can go to, and I've had relationships with them that, you know, to this day, they're still my best friends. And I was able to find other outlets and, you know, always trying to find a way to compete. That was my, for me, it was one way or another. You know, I wanted to find a way to continue to do something. So as soon as, you know, I was healthy enough to get back and do things, I was doing anything possible and joining any kind of club I could, even to this day, playing slow pitch softball at Mercer County Community Park, because once a week I got to find a way to get out.
Move
there
the outfield back. You know? Jason's coming up.
Well, I'm not so sure anymore, but yeah, but I think too, it also kind of, it's what really led me to my profession too. Right. The one thing that I truly loved about sport was the development piece of it, and was constantly trying to improve and constantly trying to get to a point to where I felt like that I could get to and reach my potential, and that's what ultimately drove me into getting into strength and conditioning, into athlete performance, and it really became my passion. And so it goes back to my point originally that whether I knew it or not, I was really preparing myself for the next step and the next stage of my life while I was going through the trials that I might have been going through as a student athlete.
I think that's such an awesome point that you bring up. So what you're suggesting is you could be upset about it. You could be kind of going through some difficulty on the emotional level, but that doesn't mean that you're going to pull away from exploring other things you could do moving forward.
All right. All right, we ready for tips of the week?
I suppose so. Tips of the week.
I think Dr. Julie should bat lead off. Since
I don't see why not. Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe to segue from the athlete in transition retirement piece, I think a tip for all student athletes would be to start now, whether you're a freshman or, you know, you're in the last few weeks of senior year, start thinking about like who you are outside of your sport and your identity outside of sport. And do a little bit of work on that, whether that's writing about that or, you know, picking up a hobby or something that's interesting you, a different outlet outside of your sport. I mean, I think that could really knock out both the transition and stress management piece, because we all need outlets that are different than actual sport participation. And I think trying to discover other parts of you that are interesting or exciting or things that you feel are challenging, you know, finding and discovering new passions, that's just a part of being alive. And I think, you know, making that transition then will be much easier when you have some other things in your life. I know you're pretty busy, and so it might be hard to, you know, fully immerse yourself into that. But even to just kind of explore like your identity outside of sport, I think is a worthy exercise.
Excellent. Go ahead, Mike.
So the one I'm going to do is called Take Five. It's a bit of a grounding strategy, something that you could use if you're feeling emotionally overwhelmed, maybe particularly helpful during finals, exams time. This takes literally 30 seconds to do, and I'm going to ask Jason and Julie to do it with me. And maybe, although you can't get a visual of this because you're hearing this audio, and if you want to try it at home, you can try it as well. So just take your hand and put it out, palm up in front of you, and just begin by, with your index finger on your opposite hand, tracing the outside of your thumb. And as you do that, breathe in. And then as you come down, breathe out. And then we're just going to do that with the next finger. So inhale fully in through the nose as you trace the outside of the index finger. And then just out as you come down. And then repeat with the middle finger. Down. And now we're going to the ring finger. And in doing this, you might want to notice the tactile sensations of the finger going up and down the hand. Finally, with the pinky, breathing in, breathing down. And that really is a simple 30-second grounding strategy. People seem to like it. If you don't want to have your hand out in front of you and sketching your hands for everybody in the world to see, you don't have to do it that way. You can do it a little bit more subtly, and you can kind of have your hand close to you and do it that way. All right, that is Take Five.
Great. All right, so I'm going to go with a quote again. I know it's a little lame back-to-back podcast to use a quote.
But I love it.
Yeah, this is one from Ben Franklin, and he once said, kind of in the spirit of stress management, when you're finished changing, you're finished. And I guess what I like to say is, whether we like it or not, change is inevitable. Embrace change as an opportunity, and I guess, you know, undoubtedly you will expend more energy trying to combat change than you will if you just embrace it and accept it and look at it as an opportunity to grow and ultimately become, you know, the person that you're destined to be. So I think that's it. That wraps up podcast number 4. I'd like to thank Dr. Julie for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Julie.
Thank you, guys.
Great to have you.
Blast.
All right. We are wrapping up our athletic seasons as well. So to all those Tigers still competing, go Tigers. And we're cheering for you.
Go Tigers.